Well, when you ask God to stretch you a little bit, He answers. I had no ambition to be step into a pastoral role, but the pastor of our home church retired at the end of August, and we're all going through the process of a pulpit committee and all of that, but they needed someone to step in and just kind of run the staff and keep things rolling, and I said, well, I could do that half-time. They said, great, and there I am. And now I'm kind of thinking, oh, I didn't really think that through, but it's been a real blessing. And Pastor Rick and I crossed paths at a park in Caldwell, Idaho. I was doing a teacher appreciation sharing with Calvary Chapel there in Caldwell in the park. There was some people over here, they were drinking. There was people over here doing all, I don't know what, and a big, big group over there doing lots of music. In the midst of that, I was sharing with some children's workers just like you, and your Pastor Rick was there and came up to me afterwards and said, hey, we'd love to get you over to Idaho Falls, and here I am, and thank you, thank you. My heart is here in the Northwest, and to be able to come over here, frankly, is just a privilege for me. The Lord has opened the doors. I was a non-churched kid, and God has drugged me around in places I never anticipated. But to come back and be here in the Northwest and to be able to talk to churches here, frankly, is the most humbling thing I've done in my life. And so it's a real privilege to be here. I've got a family. There should be a picture popping up here in a second of my family. I have three kids. My son, Jaron, is on the far right. He's this much shorter than I am. And the fellow just next to me is Chris. And he's a little bit more short than I am. And the other fellow is my son-in-law, Joey, and he thought he was tall. He's 6'2 and a half. He thought he was tall until he moved into our family. And I just encouraged him. I says, Joey, you are taller than all the ladies in our family. And those are some of our dogs and that. And they're just a great bunch of, and every Christmas we all gather together and we just hunkered down in our home for about 5 days, dogs, kids, whatever, and it is personally the most blessed thing I do. And so anyway, that's my family, and I come here tonight to talk to you about being an incredible teacher. You know, if you're gonna make the commitment to be a teacher, if you're gonna make that commitment to prepare a lesson and to come every week, Saturday nights or Sundays or whatever, and I met one fellow and a couple of his boys, they do children's church Saturday night a couple hours and a couple more on Sunday, and I just said, guys, thank you for your commitment. That's a big commitment. I talk to a lot of churches who can't get people to come and teach for 1 hour or be a helper for 1 hour. So those of you who are here tonight, you're committed to wanting to be an incredible teacher. And I just want to share with you some keys to accomplishing that. And I don't know if you saw the movie a number of years ago. It was about the man John Nash. It was called Beautiful Minds. Do you remember that movie? I'm not going to talk about the whole movie, but one line in there grabbed me. He said, let me quote this. He said, a problem well defined is a problem half solved. So if we apply that here, an incredible teacher well-defined is an incredible teacher halfway there, okay? So my question is, what does an incredible teacher look like? I want you to take 2 minutes, think back in your life. Who is an incredible teacher in your life? Sunday school, grade school, college, high school? There's got to be those teachers that just stand out. I went through, God drug me through a lot of schooling. And one of the teachers that really stuck out was a fellow in college. But I will tell you, there was a lot of teachers in college. There were a lot of teachers in seminary that didn't stand out very much. I took their classes. I did the papers. I did all the work, I got the grade, I stuffed their things into a file, never to look upon them again. And there are other profs that I pulled out the files, and frankly, there's not a whole lot there. But they touched me in such a way, I don't need the files. I still think of them. I think of them every time I stop to prepare a lesson or prepare a message or just think about teaching or just days God just brings them to my mind because they were incredible teachers that impacted me in a different way. Do you have an incredible teacher? 2 minutes, couple up with somebody next to you or behind you or in front of you, your friendly folks around here, identify a teacher that was incredible. I want to know, second grade, Mrs. Wilson, here's why she was an incredible teacher. Real brief, okay? 2 minutes. Okay, somebody want to just raise their hand and share about their incredible teacher? You're going to have to speak up loud so we can all hear you, but just real short, my second grade teacher, Mr. Sollers, he came up to me one day and says, John, we're going to do a play down at College of Idaho, and we need a young person. Would you come and be a part of that? We really believe that you can be a part of that. You have a strong voice, and you're a confident young guy. This was news to me. And it was amazing. I look back in fifth grade, another teacher, in high school, someone else, and in college, they put me on a choir. Well, it was a basketball sports choir, but folks, I can't sing. But they had me do the slides. And when I stood there acting like I was singing, they says, John, say nothing, but say the word marshmallow. That was my singing. We don't want to hear you. Just act like you're singing. But all along the way, people were encouraging me to stand in front of people and to share. But that second grade teacher, Mr. Sollers, is the one who started. Somebody has a teacher that was incredible to them? Yeah. Really? Outstanding. Outstanding. And can you read? Was she successful? Working on it. Good. She got you started. Somebody else. Helped you what? Wow. Okay. Somebody else. You guys did a lot of talking. Yes. You took Russian in high school. Okay, and why? Why did she do? He?
I don't know what he did. It was magic.
Really?
Total magic, yes.
Poof. Yeah. Okay. If I was going to learn Russian, it would be magic. Just poof. That's the only way I'd learn. Hey, I've done this before, and if you are a children's director or a youth director or you're working with teachers, this is a great exercise for people to stop and to think about those teachers that are really effective. Because it'll also bring up some, or you may just ignore all the other teachers because they just really didn't stand out. But here are some of the things people have said in the past. They cared about me outside of class. They loved me enough, fill in the blank. I've heard that over and over. They involved me, like my second grade teacher. They held me to a standard. I think Dave mentioned that earlier tonight. They were just a role model to me. They made me, do something. I don't know. I can't write. I can read, but I can't write. Okay. They knew me 10 years later. They still were in touch with me, keeping in contact. And there was just something about, they loved what they were teaching. Anybody here ever hear of Ethel Barrett? Probably not. When I was in seminary at Dallas Theological Seminary, we went to chapel every day, 5 days a week. Jacket, tie, slacks. No jeans, slacks. Coat, tie, dress shoes. Every day, and we went to chapel every day. We heard some amazing people from around the world. There was a Dr. Yamauchi who literally stood up there and most intelligent man I ever met, the most boring speaker because he literally read. His material was deep and he read it for 45 minutes. And then there was Ethel Barrett and she came and she walked up in front of all these men and she stood behind the podium. She had no audio visual, no helps. And she had us leaning forward, about to fall out of our seats, dripping on every word she shared, because she was a storyteller like nobody's business. She had such a passion that she worked that story so it was gonna literally lift us up and we would picture ourselves in the midst of that story. Now, when you think of an incredible teacher, those are some of the things we think about tonight. Typically, when you go to a teacher training event or a conference like this, those aren't the things we're talking about, are they? But those are the things, some of them and others, that make a teacher become an incredible teacher. And again, folks, if I'm gonna invest my time to be a teacher, I wanna be an incredible one. I don't wanna be the best as compared to someone else. I just wanna be one that's effective. I wanna be one that has such an impact on my students that they still remember that class. Whether they remember me personally or not isn't my concern, but if they remember that class and it made a difference in them because of my teaching, that's what I want. So I wanna talk about three things real quickly tonight. Here's my outline. I want you to repeat them after me. First of all, I want you to know your stuff. Say it with me, know your stuff. Second, I want you to know whom you are stuffing. Know whom you are stuffing. And last, I want you to stuff them elegantly. Okay, let's repeat the outline. Know your stuff, know whom you're stuffing, and stuff them elegantly. Are you gonna remember that? Good, good. First of all, know your stuff. This has two parts. One is what you typically expect when you go to a teacher training, when you come to a conference like this. You gotta have some skills. To be a good teacher, you've gotta have some skills. If you're working with children, you need to know how to share the gospel, as Dave talked about earlier. You need to know how to be an effective storyteller. You better know some classroom management or discipline techniques that are effective and appropriate. Also, you're gonna want to know about Bible learning activities, especially if you're working with preschoolers or elementary, age appropriate. You're gonna wanna know how to prepare your lesson. You're gonna want to know how to create an atmosphere that motivates kids to wanna come and want to learn. There's a lot of books out there on the table out there that talk about those type of skills. There's a lot of workshops the next couple of days, or today, tonight and tomorrow, that are gonna teach you some of the skills. You've gotta know them, because if you don't, you're gonna have problems. You're not gonna be effective. But the other part of know your stuff is you need to know what it is you're teaching. You need to know the scripture you're teaching. You need to know the story. You need to know the truth. See, if you walk in and your whole deal that night or that morning is to tell them the story of Zacchaeus, and you are so focused, you are gonna enlighten them about the tree that Zacchaeus crawled up, how big it was, and the branches, and how far out he crawled, and every bit about that tree. You may have the kids behind you, they may even listen to you and be enthralled about the tree, but how do you apply to your life knowledge of a tree? It doesn't work. You gotta know the biblical truth, and that's what you're attempting to communicate. But you better know it, because if you walk in unprepared, have you ever walked into a class unprepared? Oh my gosh, it's death. Or you go in to teach a story and you're prepared to teach it one way and that's not working. I was asked to substitute fifth grade. I was just at a seminary. They said, step in here, fifth grade. I said, great, I'm happy to do it. They handed me the materials and it was the story of Zacchaeus. And I walked in the next morning and I did not know then that I believe now kids are born with innate knowledge of the story of Zacchaeus. Because every time I'm ever asked to substitute, it's that story, no matter what age. But I walked in that day, fifth graders, I started to tell the story and they weren't with me. And one little kid said, we've heard that story. And I thought for a minute, I says, well, you're gonna hear it again. And boom, we just plowed on through. Because I didn't really know it. I just knew one way of sharing it, and it was death. And I said, that will never happen to me again. You gotta know what you're talking about, because if you don't, I've literally observed classes where they said, good morning, children. They're reading it right out of the book. You've lost the kids and you haven't even started. You've got to know what it is you're teaching. And I'll talk about that more tomorrow morning. I'll talk about that more tomorrow afternoon. So there's two keys to knowing your stuff. And these are real simple, folks. You need to create an atmosphere where the kids want to learn. That's your skills. And you've got to be prepared to teach a biblical truth. These are not tough. If you want to create that atmosphere, frankly, that's easy. You can create a great atmosphere. You could have balloons and parties and great food and games and all sorts of things. Are the kids going to come? They're going to love it. They're going to be attracted. They're going to flock to your class. They're going to drag their parents out of the home. I want to get to Sunday school. But if that's all you've got is that fun, and you don't really have a truth to teach, after a while, you're going to feel kind of empty. Did I really commit myself just to have a fun time with the kids? No. Now, the flip side is you can be so prepared to teach a biblical truth that the kids will come in and you'll teach them the truth, but they are bored and they don't want to come back. And they drag their parents and say, oh, do I have to go? See, what you need is a marriage of both. You have to create a great atmosphere and you have to be prepared to teach the biblical truth. It's that simple, folks. Everything we're talking about here is to accomplish those two goals. You create a great atmosphere where the kids want to come, and it's designed to teach a biblical truth that they can apply to their life. You got it. That's knowing your stuff. Second was what? Know whom you're stuffing. Know whom you're stuffing. This is talking about getting to know your kids. Know your stuff is just to know about kids in general, age group characteristics or needs, or what I like to say, how God designed young kids. You need to know that. That's knowing your stuff, is knowing about kids. The second one is to know whom you're stuffing. This is getting to know your kids. This is talking about relationship. Because without relationship, it's tough. It's tough. I will tell you right now, I have failed at teaching at every age level. Okay? Whether that's twos and threes, fours and fives, that's fifth and sixth grade, high school, junior high, the XYZ, the extra years of zest, the senior citizens, pretty much failed there too. I failed at every level. Here's my experience real quickly with the twos and threes. I'm in seminary. My wife's expecting our first child. I kind of think, okay, well, I'm in seminary. I'm a Christian ed major. Well, if we're going to have one of these little ones, maybe I'll go to the seminary and take some classes on teaching children. Isn't that the right thing to do? So I did. I took every class at seminary about teaching young children. My wife, about the time we actually had a little one, suggested, perhaps, John, maybe in addition to the courses you've taken, you might want to come to the church and work with real live children for the first time in your life, before I actually release our little one into your hands. You know, my wife is a wise person. Anyway, so I go into the two-year-old class, and they said, would you teach the story? I says, 3 years of Greek. I've had almost 2 years of Hebrew. I have finished homiletics. I can teach the story, sure. I walk in, I'm looking for just even this would have been nice. They don't have this in the twos and threes class. I needed this. I've got my exegetical notes. I got to spread them out. One of the kids had come up, latched onto my leg, wandered off, drool strung out this far. I'm about ready to just flee. Finally, it came to story time. And they're just all over the place. And then my wife, she has magic like the lesson teacher. She walked over to an open area in the corner and she took some tape and she started putting a big half circle in the floor. She didn't even say a word. And the little kids, like sheep, came running over to sit, not near, right on the tape. No, on the tape. And they sat on the tape. I couldn't wait to get to seminary and run up to Prof. Hendrick's class and say, Prof, did you know about tape? It works. Let me tell you, I tried teaching that story. I tried for 22 minutes. I never got through this story with the two-year-olds. I quit. After the class, I walked to my wife and I said, Peg, I am confident there's more. There is someplace else in this church that can make better use of my time and my abilities than the two-year-old class. She says, well, hang in a couple more weeks and we'll see. About the third or fourth week, see, there was one kid, when I teach the story, he didn't sit on the tape. He just kind of wandered up and down the wall. I don't know what that was. One little child was up on, and I don't know why we had this. This is a few years ago. I hope you don't have this. They had the rocking horses with the springs. I mean, that's the most dangerous thing I can imagine now, except darts, blow darts. I mean, you know, they have, at children's pastor's conferences, they used to have blow darts. You used to pop balloons. The insurance people must have outbanned those. Anyway, this little boy was sitting up on this rocking horse, rocking, and this sweet little girl in the pink dress, the bow, walked up and said, "Get off." He said, "No." And immediately, boom, she latches her mouth on his leg, bites through his jeans, pierces the skin. And I'm going, oh, Peg, help, help, please, help. What? See, I didn't have too many skills at the time. I didn't know much about classroom management. Folks, you got to know that stuff. I'm sure you're not as naive and ignorant as I was, but you got to know those skills. Those are just basics. About the third week, we had one of those Dutch doors, is it, where the top opens and the bottom can stay shut. And the parents came up and they kind of handed their child this way and I kind of grab them. And I'm still kind of at this point, just kind of get them down quick before I break them. And one of the, and I kind of was looking at the child and the parent says, excuse me. And I go, oh yeah, can I help you? And they says, are you guys teaching stories in here? I mean, this is 21 to 27 month. It wasn't even 2 year old. Are you teaching stories in here? I says, well, we're trying. Are you singing songs? I go, oh yeah. Why? Well, my son, the one who wanders up and down the wall, at home is talking about these stories and singing these songs, and we just didn't know where he was getting that. And I was astounded. His name was Caleb, and when he came into our class, we were warned, Caleb, about 11:15, second hour, usually has to go number two. Hey, these are realities. Now, the reality in our classroom was, if you're the closest, you get the responsibility at that time. I will tell you, I immediately recruited my best friend Kelly and his wife. So at least it was between Kelly and I to stay away from Caleb. But you know what else we did in the 6 months we had Caleb? We loved him. We taught him. And we promised ourselves that we would not share that reputation. If it didn't fully change, we did not want to share that reputation when he went into the next class. Caleb was a great kid. A great kid. Let's not share those reputations. But the key to all of this is I needed to get to know the kids. It was great. When I started, it was like this. I would pick them up, turn them around, okay, hi Timmy, and sit them back down, because their names were always on the back. But we need to get to know their names. We need to get to know them personally. Let me tell you about failing with the fifth and sixth grade real quick. My wife was teaching the Wednesday night program, and I was helping her, and the fifth and sixth graders, we were meeting with a big group, and then we broke into small groups, and we went into the small group class. Man, it was death. I was to reinforce things. They were to do some journaling and then share that. Man, it was death. It did not work. The next week, I tried some different things. That still didn't work. I talked to my wife, but I didn't tell her everything. You see, I would go to children's pastors' conference and teach a workshop on how to be an effective fifth and sixth grade teacher. At my church, I was failing horribly with fifth and sixth graders. And then it dawned on me, I can't pick them up, turn them around, and tell their names on the back. And I didn't know the kids, and they didn't know me. Got an idea. The kids come in that Wednesday night. They did the large group. They come dragging slowly into the small group. They come in and they sit down. And I says, hey, before we get into this, would you guys like to have a party? Do you like parties? Kind of look at each other. I says, a party? This would be just for the fifth and sixth graders, just you guys. They're saying, a party? I go, yeah, seriously, a party. Not here, even at the church. We'll do it elsewhere, and we'll invite all the fifth and sixth graders to come. And would, do you mind if we invite the girl fifth and sixth graders because they were in a different class? Well, yeah, we can invite them. We're going to have a party. It says, yeah, the younger ones can't come. The older kids can't come, just for fifth and sixth grade. They said, really? I says, yeah, in fact, let's just take 5 minutes and plan what that party would look like. Now the kids are sitting up, leaning forward. They're into this. At the party, guess how many kids came? It was at our house. Any guesses? Every single fifth and sixth grader who had ever attended that church for any reason for the last 2 or 3 or 4 years, except one little girl who was sick and cried because she could not come. We had pizza, we had video games, we had all the normal things. We had a basement, so we had tennis balls that you would hit down the stairs across through all the kids and hit a 3-pound coffee can type thing. And then we played the onion game. I introduced the onion game to him. My son Jaron up there, he was in high school, probably sophomore, junior at the time. And I took Jaron, I stood him up against a wall and I put post-it notes with numbers on his chest. And the kids had to stand about 10 feet away, and they took an onion. It was a big onion, and they had to do it underhand, no overhand, but they got to toss the onion at my son's chest and hit a post-it note if they could. There was no prizes. We didn't keep track, but they did. How many points did you get? How many points did you get? And they said, can we do it again? I said, sure, back of the line. My son Jaron says, no more. And the kids loved it. And I said, shh, kids, don't tell anybody about the onion game. It's just the fifth and sixth graders thing. I had parents coming up the next morning threatening and bribing me to tell them about the onion game. And I went to that fifth grade class the next Wednesday night. Total change. Kids came fast, came in quick. They responded to anything I had to say. They talked about the party, but we talked about the lesson. We talked about journaling. All of it changed because of relationship. See that second and third grade class? When my wife and I were in there and Kelly and Cindy were in there, that class blossomed. We got to know the kids well, they got to know us. Right next to us was a class, they couldn't get enough people in there. It was rotating all the time, it was chaos. I went in there a couple of times and mostly it was just grab enough kids, pull them off in a corner and hope they don't hurt each other. But in our class, it was totally different because it was four of us and at least two of us were there every week. We knew the kids and they knew us. Same thing in the fifth and sixth grade. Youth workers, you pretty much got this down. You know the importance of relationship. But many of us who are teaching in Sunday school or something like that, well, frankly, sometimes we may only be in there for an hour. And if you don't have relationship, it's not gonna work. Here's my quick check. Do the kids know your name? If I go to big churches, I'll walk up and down the hall. I say, well, who's your Sunday school teacher? If they don't know your name, probably not much of a relationship. My question for you is, how much do you know about each of your kids? What do you know about their home life, their siblings? Do they have siblings? What do you know about them? Because see, the better you know them, the better you'll be able to speak into their lives. Does that make sense? You got to know your stuff and you got to know whom you're stuffing. Third, and I'm gonna do this real quick, but we'll pick up on some of this tomorrow. You need to stuff them elegantly. And you would think this would talk about techniques and methodology, and it can, but I want to talk about the drive behind it. What drives us to use good methods? I want to talk to you real quick. My wife went to work for a school district a few years ago, and my wife does not have a bachelor's degree, is not tenured, or any of those things. The lady who was there before had all that. Had a bachelor's, had a master's, she was fully tenured. She was overseeing federally funded after school programs. And they wanted to fire her, but it took time to ease her out because she just didn't do the job. She came in at 8, she left at 3, she left emails unanswered, she was just filling a seat. My wife came in and she just did all the things that were needed because she just wanted to do a good job. What's that drive that makes the difference? Because if you're walking into your class and you're just filling the time, if you're preparing the lesson, getting through it, and walking out, but that's it, you may be a little bit more like Kay, who just wasn't doing the job. There's got to be that drive. I was teaching Bible learning activities for preschoolers in in Yakima, Washington. We broke up into small groups, and they were down on the floor, and they had these cards they were rearranging. And there was this one elderly lady, and she was down on the floor. And I walked down to her. I says, "Ma'am, you don't have to get on the floor. Let me help you up." She says, "Oh, I'm just fine. I'm just fine. You're doing great." I says, "No, I'll help you." She says, "No, leave me alone." I says, "Ma'am, do you mind if I ask how old you are?" She says, "I'm 83. And I've been teaching preschoolers for 72 years. I says, "Ma'am, can I trade places with you? Would you teach me and the rest of us? Because I'm sure you've got a..." "Oh, no. You're doing great. I'm learning lots of good stuff." What in the world would drive someone who's taught preschoolers for 72 years to get up early on a Saturday morning when most people weren't and come down to learn one more thing to teach more effectively? It's that drive, it's that passion. When I had the privilege of getting to know some great men as God drug me around. One of them was Bruce Wilkinson. And he was told the story of when he was at seminary. Dave mentioned Howard Hendricks. Howard Hendricks has probably been one of the great influencers of key leaders in our country and one of the most creative teachers that I've ever known. Well, Bruce Wilkinson decided one day that when Howard Hendricks began teaching, he would just stare out the window. Now, Hendricks would come in, literally sit on a high chair behind a little podium, and he would start tapping his leg with about 60 seconds before the clock began the hour, and boom, as soon as the hour began, he was off and running. He didn't waste a moment. And he started that class, he took off, everybody's writing feverishly, except Wilkinson, just staring out the window. Hendricks got up, started telling some jokes, nothing. Wilkinson just stared. The whole class is just erupting. And Wilkinson's just looking out the window. Hendricks moved over to that side of the room. And he was writing stuff up here, important stuff. People were, "I got to get this down. This is good stuff." Wilkinson doesn't write down anything. He's just staring out the window. Hendricks literally started walking up the aisle until he was standing right next to Wilkinson. Is this a little uncomfortable? Not too bad, not too bad. This is a great technique for those kids who aren't quite paying attention to you. Just go stand next to him. He was standing right next to Wilkinson, and Wilkinson didn't even look up. And finally, he smacked his hand on Wilkinson's desk. He yells at him, "Wilkinson, what are you doing?" "Oh, prof, nothing. Hey, great class. This is good stuff." And his whole purpose was to see how far Hendricks would go if just one student wasn't paying attention. And everybody in that class found out he would do almost anything to make sure that every student was taking part in that class. He wasn't satisfied. And frankly, folks, by the time you get to college and seminary or college and grad school, hey, you pay your money, you come and get what you want. Most profs just come, "Here's what I'm sharing. Hey, you get it or not, that's up to you." But not Hendricks. He would do anything to make sure that he got their attention, including Wilkinson. Anyway, what are our three steps? Know your stuff. Know whom you're stuffing and stuff them elegantly. I wish I had a little bit more time. Tomorrow, I will tell you the story of Norma. Norma knows how to know your stuff. She knows how to stuff them well. Know your stuff, know whom you're stuffing, and stuff them elegantly. She knows those steps. And she's in a church of about 80 with a class of about 6. But she is the most effective teacher I've seen in a church. She was just amazing. Two things I want to share with you as we close tonight. I want to make sure we keep track of our time so we all come back fresh in the morning. First of all, I want to thank you. Frankly, what you do this Sunday is a lot more challenging than what I'm doing tonight and tomorrow. What Pastor Rick does every Sunday is so much more challenging. See, I've shared a message like this a few times before. I can kind of work it around it a bit. But what you teach every Sunday, what pastors like Pastor Rick does every Sunday, is brand new. You're on the front lines, and I applaud you for it. I thank you for what you're doing. My job's a whole lot easier tonight and tomorrow than what you do. Second, pull out your smartphones. This is the end of mine. Pull out your smartphones, okay? If you're part of Facebook, and you don't actually have to do it right now, but I want you to search for a group called I Love Kidmin. I Love Kidmin, K-I-D-M-I-N. I Love Kidmin. This is a group that was started by Ryan Frank, a good friend of mine. He runs Kids Matter magazine, and he started this Facebook page. It now has over 7,500 people just like you involved in children's ministry at some level all across the country. Little churches, humongous churches, teachers, leaders, helpers. You can go through there, you can sift through. People will throw out all sorts of questions and you'll have all sorts of people throw answers at you. It's just a wonderful place to get a lot of information from other people in churches all across the country. I look at this every day. And just 2 weeks ago, I threw a question up there that our church was wrestling with that I didn't have a good idea about. And within 24 hours, I had 50 people reply to me. 50. Depending on your question, you may not get that much. You may get more. But to me, it's one of the best resources I know just to see and hear what other people are talking about and to throw out your own questions. Anyway, what are the three steps? Know your stuff. Know whom you're stuffing in. Stuff them elegantly. There's more to those three steps. I'll share that tomorrow afternoon in the last keynote of the day. Thank you.